Mr. Adolf Reel III, you were just telling me about whether they open fire very often.
I would say, on balance, no, not all that often. There were occasions, of course, when they had to do it, either for their own protection or because they'd run into reasonably serious incidents. But generally speaking, they were trained and told to be pretty careful about using the turret gun.
So they were mostly there in case mobs gathered to riot?
Yes, they could pass back useful information straight away because they could get nearer some potential troubles than a foot patrol could have got. And over the radio, they could pass the information back immediately, and then such actions might be deemed necessary from what they had sent back. Well, that could be then put into being.
How dangerous was this work for the men who manned the armoured cars? Were they in much danger?
I would say they had a very reasonable degree of protection, because the armoured car itself was, of pretty strong metal, and to the best of my recollection, bullets had very little effect at all, and therefore, if they ran into actual troubles where weapons were being discharged, all the occupants could, in fact, disappear inside. Admittedly, the driver was probably the most vulnerable, but I don't remember offhand any particular casualties amongst armoured car crews.
But what about petrol bombs and mines? Were they used against them?
At that stage, and I'm thinking now of around, 45, 46 in Jerusalem, I don't remember either Arabs or Jews having that type of weapon. Can't think of an incident at the moment that I can remember where an armoured car was actually blown up.
What was morale in the Palestine police like in view of such incidents as the blowing up of the Haifa HQ and the King David Hotel and so on, and casualties?
Well, obviously, immediately after an incident such as that, morale did take a bit of a beating, but not for very long, because I think that the force generally realised and recognised the fact that, to all intents and purposes, they were engaged in a type of war, shall we say. There were a sufficient number of unpleasant incidents going on all the time, more instituted probably by the Jews than the Arabs, which therefore kept the men on their toes. They knew they were at war in a partial sense, and that I think is probably the answer. Once you know a thing like that, you regard it as such.
What were relations like with the local administration, between the police and the local administration?
Well, that would be on a very restricted basis, in the sense that only down to a certain level, shall we say, on the police side, would they be liaising with both government and army, so that that sort of thing didn't really occur or spread to the lower ranks. In other words, I'm talking now as second in command of a district. Well, I would have been, except on the rare occasion, I wouldn't have been doing any personal liaison with an army command. That would have been done at a slightly higher level. I might come into it then at a later date, when in fact I had to cooperate with this particular army unit, and then I would see perhaps the lieutenant colonel in charge of a battalion or whatever it may be. But generally speaking, the plans were made at a higher level.
But what about cooperation with the local civil administrators, like district officers and so on?
Oh, yes, there had to be cooperation there most of the time, merely because in many instances, through cooperation, certain troubles were prevented, in fact. So there was, I would say, overall, no actual lack of cooperation. It went on, but it wouldn't go on to quite the same extent as it would have been happening under normal peacetime conditions.
Did you feel that the administration and the police understood each other?
Yes, I did. Yes. Yes, I don't remember running up against any big differences.
Did you have enough men and enough equipment to do the job there, do you think?
Once the police mobile force had been established, yes. Prior to that, no. And that was, of course, why it was brought into being. And you'll find I explained that in my notes there. That it just became necessary to set up this extra force. And I give the strengths of it, in fact, there, so that you can get an indication.
This is in your notes?
Yes, yeah, it is there.
Did you have any women in the Palestine Police?
I don't remember any women other than in the administrative side in an office. Not on any external duties of any kind at all.
Would they have been useful to you if you had had them?
Under the circumstances, I would say not really. Not really, because most of the circumstances were of a fighting or a battle element about them.
But would they have been useful for things like searching women members of the public and so on?
You know, strangely enough, I don't remember, except the only time I remember Arab or Jewish women causing any trouble, particularly the Jewish women, were in the internment camps and in the settlements, the Jewish settlements. From time to time, it did become necessary for a police reconnaissance or force of some kind or other to go into a Jewish settlement. And there, we could have done with one or two women, yes, agreed, because the women used to cause quite a lot of trouble then on those occasions. But that was only, they were isolated instances as opposed to the general run of things.
So did that mean that the women got away without being searched?
Could have meant that, although I don't remember going into a Jewish settlement to carry out individual searches. One was looking more for caches of arms and similar things in buildings, not so much on individuals.
Not body searches?
Not body searches as such, no.
Was much damage done on the searches? On these searches?
No, I would say that the discipline was good. Officers in charge of search parties had very definite instructions not to cause any unnecessary damage at all. And I can remember going into a Jewish settlement myself, and certainly no damage was caused whatsoever. There were one or two mild skirmishes occasionally with individuals, but not damage to their property, to their tents, to their huts, or anything else, no.
Would they be entitled to compensation if the damage was done?
That's quite a difficult question, because I don't really think I know the answer to that. I would doubt whether in the latter stages, when things were happening sort of fairly constantly, whether any claim by a settlement of damage, say, to a hut or something else, which would have been done in a lawful manner, in the sense that we had police patrols or whatever, or army units, whatever it may be, would have had the right to have gone in merely because of information that might have come about, either that certain terrorists were in hiding there or a certain crime had been carried out from that particular place. Therefore, I think it would be considered by a government department in Jerusalem that there was every right for that access to have been made, and therefore I doubt if they would have recognized a claim under those circumstances.
What did you feel about the policy of the British government towards the mandate? Were the police happy or not with British government policy?
I think generally they looked upon it as a normal happening. We had been given this mandate to control and look after Palestine from way back after, in fact, the Turks were thrown out of the country. And but on the other hand, I don't know that individual units and people would have, generally speaking, given an awful lot of thought to that sort of particular aspect, because they were there to do a certain job of work under certain conditions. I'm not always sure that they would have been thinking of the underlying factors, shall we say.
How did you come to leave the Palestine Police, and when?
Well, the Inspector General asked me to fly home in January 48 and to set up this rehabilitation unit in London. I had instructions to go to the Colonial Office, and we also set up a depot at Coddicote in Hertfordshire, merely because with a large force of this kind it was anticipated and seen well in advance that, in fact, there were going to be considerable problems to close down a force of this nature. So I was given instructions to go home, set up this office in the vicinity of the Colonial Office, make preparations, and at the depot in Hertfordshire, make preparations to receive British police back into the country as they came, to set up a type of employment agency. And I spent a lot of time in the first several months going round big firms, manufacturers and so on, seeing what the job situation was. I've got all the newspaper cuttings now, in fact, about it in that envelope of mine. And well, that really is about it. I mean, that was the object of the thing. Apart from this business of working out the financial aspects, people's entitlement, pensions, gratuities, and so on and so forth. And it took a long, long time. I mean, it was over a 3-year job altogether.
Whilst, after you went back to the UK, the emergency situation in Malaya blew up in 48.
That is true, yes.
Did that mean that you then started to direct, as Palestine policemen, to go to Malaya?
Not at that time, no. Later on, some Palestine police did, in fact, go to Malaya, but not immediately.
Did you have anything to do with that?
No, nothing at all, no.
They just applied to the Colonial Office to go?
Exactly, yes. Yes, because I only stayed 3 years on that job because I couldn't see. Well, it was beginning to, when I eventually did leave, we closed down Victoria Street. In fact, we still kept the depot in Coddicote open for a bit longer, but Most of the work had been done by the end of that period, and obviously the colonial officers didn't want to have the expense, the additional expenses, shall we say, of keeping these places open forever and ever. And once I'd finally personally decided that there was nothing to go back to make it worthwhile going back abroad again, I just, in fact, packed up completely. I've got letters acknowledging that fact and thanking me and so on and so forth.
What were your feelings about the ending of the British Mandate in Palestine?
I was rather sad when I first heard that, as we all heard, that in fact this was the definite end, although it appeared to have been building up to that for quite a while, because it was a lovely country to be in, given more normal conditions. But as circumstances were at the time when in fact we did surrender the mandate, well, I think most people would say that they got out with a certain amount of relief, because things really were getting pretty hot under the collar, no doubt about that.
Are you proud of having served in the Palestine Police?
Very much so, yes. Very much so, because one doesn't say this on a personal basis, one says this on a more general basis, but I think that Edgar Horn, in his book which he wrote, having used the title A Job Well Done, and I feel myself that that was exactly what did occur. That if you tot up things that were done by a large number of people, because there were large numbers involved, it was a very big force, that they did do an excellent job of work over the years, and that had it not been for, what should we call it, world politics, if you like, and the machinations of Zionism, that possibly things might have turned out a bit differently, but they didn't. And, well, that's it, isn't it?